Okay. Welcome, everybody. Today, it is my pleasure to interview Dr. Karen Baikie. She is a certified Hakomi therapist, and I hope I remember to pronounce that correctly. She's a consultant, a clinical psychologist with over 17 years experience working with individuals and couples in private practice in Sydney. And the title for today's interview is Healing the Pain of Trauma. So thank you so much, Dr. Baikie, for joining us today. And I I know you're in Sydney, so I hope it's not either too early or too late for you.
I know, it's just perfect. It's an absolute pleasure to speak with you, Audrey. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you do and what your approach is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been working with adults particularly who've experienced trauma, abuse and attachment disruption. So longer term therapy, early childhood things, patterns that recur from, you know, less than ideal childhoods and difficulties early in life. And my approach is I use a mindfulness-based somatic approach in my work. So as a Hakomi, a therapist and trainer, we very much see mindfulness as the core of our work. And we also use the body in the sense of accessing the information in the body. So it's not so much a body hands-on massage type of approach, but more using mindfulness to really get the information that is locked in the body. So my take is that there is just so much healing potential and wisdom that our body has to offer if we know how to access it. And so often people are in pain or in discomfort or suffering. They've actually lost touch with what the body is trying to tell, and their body becomes the enemy. And I want to help people to, you know, befriend the body again and actually learn from the wisdom of the body. So I work with supporting people to release, in a way, the trauma that's locked in the body and free up to return to, you know, life, really, to come out of those systems. So, and I guess I use a really whole body approach. So I'm interested in the gut and the gut-brain connection and the physical and the emotional symptoms as well, because I think everything, you know, everything connects to everything else. It's a whole big system that's all connected. So that's how I see it.
Yes. And for some people, it may not be, it might be a stretch to think about how trauma could result in physical pain later. Yeah. Can you talk about how unresolved trauma might contribute to pain and suffering?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is often really a surprise for people who haven't thought about it in this way. A lot of times in an initial session with someone, when I suggest that I think what's going on is actually trauma, they can be quite surprised and a little blown away that they'd never thought of it like that before. But about it and you know, it always makes sense, like, wow, that is really okay. Wow, I hadn't, you know, ever thought of it like that. So the way that I see it is that we often think about trauma as the event, you know, the car accident, the assault, the whatever happened to us. And we use that word a little loosely, and I think it's unhelpful. So I don't think of trauma as the event. There's the thing that happened, but trauma actually is the event in the physical body. It's what happens in the physiological response. So we have this pre-programmed, you know, biological response to threat and danger. That's all set, ready to go, actually phenomenally helpful. It's a survival strategy. And really that's this inbuilt fight, flight, freeze mechanism that we have. And that's really what we're meant to do when exposed to something life-threatening or even just something that's a sudden shock, you know. That's supposed to happen. There's actually already a whole system that works. So interestingly, I was completely blown away when I heard this the first time, is that animals don't get PTSD. They don't get post-traumatic stress disorder. And in fact, what they have is a completely inbuilt mechanism for releasing trauma. Mm-hmm. And if they don't do that for some reason, if there's a physical incapacity to do that, an animal will be dead in about 2 weeks. So we actually sustain and hold the trauma in our bodies for a long time, which is what results in, you know, the distress and the symptoms that we so often see for people. So so that's kind of the overall, and then I can talk a little bit about how that actually works. So what happens is when a threat happens, there's this immediate interpretation by the organism of what to do. Stephen Porges actually calls this neuroception, which is the perception of the nervous system. So it's not a conscious decision. It's actually your system just takes the information at hand in the environment and makes a very quick decision, which is to fight, flight, or freeze. And so if there's enough strength, if the organism, if you as a human are big enough to overpower the attacker or to, you know, to use those big muscles and, you know, save yourself, that's what would happen, the fight response, which would include, you know, punching, pushing, kicking, you know, activating those muscles to get the, you know, the threat away. If that's not possible and there's a capacity for escape, then the animal or the human would flee, would run. So we see this in the wild, you know, a lion, you know, chase, and the animals all run like crazy, and often get away. So the flight response is the other option. And then if neither of those is possible, then the organism will actually go to freeze, which is also a survival strategy. So this is the cat playing with the, you know, the mouse playing dead with the cat, the deer in the headlights, because in fact, you know, if the animal plays dead and goes in, it's not conscious, of course, they don't decide to play dead, but the body goes into this shutdown and freeze response, then what happens is the predator will actually give up. An animal won't eat another dead animal because it could get sick. It could be infected. It could have been dead for a long time. So it's actually evolved as a survival strategy to freeze. And that's really important for people to know, because they often will see the freeze as a kind of weaker or lesser option, and it's not. In certain cases, it is the way that an animal would survive. But then what happens, and this is often the case with childhood difficulties, is that the child often has to freeze. They can't fight back. They can't run away. They basically end up in a freeze state. And so that's when we end up with chronic pain and suffering, because this freeze state becomes a habit and a kind of way of being. And even if you were just, if the listeners are just, you just imagine kind of like a little shock, like a little jump, you immediately can feel what your muscles do. Everything goes on. Everything gets tight. You know, your neck muscles, your shoulder muscles, your arms, your gut, everything contracts. And so that pattern gets established as the kind of natural way of being. And over time, that's exhausting to the body. The body is not meant to live in that chronic state. The fight, flight, freeze is meant to only be an acute response to something, and then it's meant to be resolved. So that's how I see it connecting in with pain and suffering, because these responses get stuck in the body, and then we've got to look to how to resolve those.
Yeah, and I think you said something that makes a lot of sense to me too, in that we don't always have control over how we respond. That's right. Then we might blame ourselves for the way we responded.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so then there's layers of guilt, there's layers of shame that come in. So in a way, what happens for us as humans compared to animals, our very smart thinking brain, the prefrontal cortex, gets in the way.
Yeah.
So it often stops us from doing the things that would naturally happen that an animal would do. You know, people in a situation who've frozen might have the impulse to flee, but their brain says, well, you can't leave now. You can't, you know, run out of the hospital right now, or you can't you know, punch up the person who just drove into your car. Mm-hmm. You know, the impulse might be there, but we cognitively actually restrain that. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's a good thing. But in that moment, but then what happens is those responses never get dealt with. And so the way I see it is we are often dealing with those, what we call incomplete or truncated defensive responses, which is really the fight or flight that didn't get to happen.
Can you talk about how you work with people to start to release the physical pain from trauma?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm often in an initial presentation, I'm looking for signs of what didn't get to happen. Mm-hmm. So for example, and I'm not saying this would be the case for every single presentation like this, but it's interesting how frequent it can be. So for example, an anxiety presentation, if someone comes and what's happening in their life is they're very anxious, they're often plagued by anxiety, and you know that's the main core issue that they're working with. Well, oftentimes an anxiety response will be an incomplete flight response. So there's actually a need to flee from something that didn't get to happen. And so it's as if this impulse to run, to get out, to move away is kind of always there trying to happen. Mm-hmm. And then another one I will see often is anger or aggression. I see that often as an incomplete fight response. So there's this kind of wanting to punch, wanting to hit, always, you know, kind of got that aggression up. And that can happen in couples, in workplaces, because there's a fight response, not complete. And then the other one that I often see would be depression or chronic pain or chronic fatigue, which is often the freeze response locked in. So once we kind of get a sense of that, then to work with it, the first thing we need to do is actually resource the body. And that might take a little time. We can't always go straight into working directly with those responses because the person needs to feel safe and grounded and resourced. And so oftentimes what happens for people is they're very out of touch with their bodies. Their body, as I said, has become like an enemy. Mm-hmm. They often don't feel very much in their bodies. It's really shut down. They can't really tell what's going on. So often that's really working with some mindfulness and grounding and orienting techniques and giving people time to actually start to feel back into their bodies. Then when we can do that and when it seems kind of reliably that they can tune into what's happening, then the really kind of cool work begins for me. I just love this part. Then what we're doing is if we think about a particular event, or we don't even, the good thing about this is you don't even need to know what the trauma was. Yeah. And that's really helpful. For some people have got no memories, they just know something bad happened in the past, and they feel nervous and often very ashamed that they can't heal because they don't remember. Mm-hmm. And the great thing is you just don't even need to know the story. It's really, I mean, you can if you want, you can tell me if you like, but it's not really going to make a grand difference. What we want to do is work with wherever they're starting. So whatever's presenting, if there's anxiety, if there's anger, if there's depression, and invite the person mindfully to notice what's happening in their body. And then what I'm looking for is any signals of some kind of fight flight impulse. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching for, you know, and it can be very subtle. Sometimes a person will just make a sort of teeny weeny little, like towards a fist, for example, mm-hmm. like the hand just kind of goes towards a fist. Or if I ask them, you know, I try and get that information. What's the impulse? What wants to happen here? What does your body wanting to do? And they might say, you know, I just want to run out of the room. Or so then we can actually work with those impulses safely and calmly in my office. So I will be working with, you know, if they want to run out of the room, we often use that in imagination. So whilst being mindful and noticing the body, I get somebody to imagine running and running and running and running and running and running. And if you imagine running but stay connected to the body, then it actually settles when it's done. And the cool thing is that we know from neuroplasticity and all the great work that's been done in neuroscience that, in fact, imagining it to the body is almost the same as doing it. You can have the same benefit. Yeah. So, and then the same, if it's a more of a fight response, we'll work with a punch or a hit or a kick, it's not cathartic. That's really important to understand. It's not about just, you know, primal sort of screaming and kicking, and it's not about expressing it, because what happens, people are doing that all the time. And a person who's got, you know, fight response is probably yelling and slamming doors and, you know, doing that in their life anyway. And if that was going to work, they'd not need me at all. Like, they would have been done by yes. now. But it's about bringing mindfulness to it. And so if we were working with one of those impulses, is to actually really slowly feel into exactly what the body wants to do. And the movement might be very slow, but it's coming from the impulse of the body rather than what the mind thinks, which is why it's so important to have some mindfulness, you know, on board. And then when we do that, this is the sort of what we call truncated defensive responses. So the defensive responses are the fight flight, and the truncated is the ones that didn't get to happen. So in a way, I say to people, you know, your body doesn't have a time monitor like we do. It doesn't know whether this is happening now in my office or back there 20 years ago when this happened. And it's like the body says, well, I need to do this. I need to kick in this way. I can feel that impulse. If we allow it to do it just how it wants to do it, there's a huge amount of relief that comes and release. And most of the time people will feel, you know, very relaxed. They'll feel somewhat tired. It's quite effortful. It feels like you just ran a bit of a marathon, but it's a good feeling. And we're always going to the feelings, like what feels good. Mm-hmm. Because it should feel satisfying and complete in that way. Probably the most common little phrase that I've been getting a lot the last few weeks is some version of, gee, that was odd but good, or weird but helpful. Mm-hmm. So it's a little unusual, but it always has that, you know, feeling of satisfaction. And that's how I see it. If you look at a lion attacking, you know, smaller animal on YouTube, and when they rip into the meat, there's an enormous feeling of satisfaction. It's you know, clearly that's what the animal is meant to be doing, the satisfaction that shows up. And so that's always what I'm looking for, is we know we've got somewhere when the body feels good and satisfied.
So this is a process of understanding what was inhibited, working towards getting in touch with the body, feeling safe, and then moving into somehow visualizing or experiencing the physical, whether it's fleeing or fighting or freezing, that didn't happen.
That's right.
So is this a one-time thing, or do people need to do this release more than once?
Well, it can vary. It's usually not one session only, but what I find is that if you do the groundwork and you really build up safety, then that can take a little while. But when it's like, to me, when the body is ready, oftentimes working with one particular impulse, that one might be done in one session. Mm-hmm. Another layer might come, especially if it's a complex trauma with lots of different elements and maybe happened over a long period of time. But generally speaking, once it's reached that satisfaction, then that particular release does not have to happen again. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, sometimes, you know, with people with a specific one, you know, an adult event might have worked, you know, three or four sessions around different elements of the particular event. But then also I've had situations where when a person has presented and in their telling of some of their story, I've thought, oh, it looks like there are three places here. When we've gone to the bigger one, the first one, initial biggest one, the others then didn't really need to happen. Mm-hmm. So it can be very variable. I'm not saying it's a one-hit wonder, but it's generally, when we get to that place, it's generally a lot quicker and more effective than people would imagine.
So again, it's very much a process and tying this trauma to what's going on physically and being very mindful of what's gone on physically.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, so, it's just being friends with the body and listening to what the body is really telling you that needs to happen. It's like learning a new language. Initially, it's like I don't speak the language of the body. I have to actually learn how it's trying to speak to me.
Yeah, decode it. So I'm curious, do certain traumas result in your experience, do certain traumas result in certain kinds of pain? Is there an association between the kind of trauma and the kind of pain?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that there's a bit of a yes and no to that answer. I think there are certain patterns that are more likely. So for childhood abuse, for example, it's far more likely to be freeze of some description. Mm-hmm. It may be presenting slightly differently, but there's a kind of numbing and often a depression, a dissociation. People are not really connected, that will happen. Whereas, you know, more adult traumas will usually have more of the what we often think of as trauma, the flashbacks, the mm-hmm. intrusive, kind of the hyperarousal symptoms will show up a little bit more. And then various events would create, you know, more likely to produce a flight response, and some would be more likely to produce a fight response. And I think that's helpful, but I also try very strongly to just listen to the wisdom of this particular body right in front of me, and trust that if we can really access the wisdom and what the body needs to do, then that's what's going to need to help. The frames and the, you know, the scaffolding of the theory helps me a little to have a bit of an idea where we're headed and what the territory is, but really the key is what you're sitting with right there in front of me.
This sounds very interesting. So if people wanted to learn more about this and to explore how it might apply to them, what would you suggest?
Well, I've the things that I'm incorporating are HACOMI, mindfulness-based somatic psychotherapy. Also, I've trained in sensory motor psychotherapy and somatic experiencing. They're all quite similar in a lot of ways, different, you know, different people and different training organizations, but with a very similar kind of approach. And what I've done on my website is I've got a page on trauma and a page on HACOMI with a bunch of books and websites, and often I just suggest people can start there, they can link to those other resources and do a little bit more reading. There are some good books, some kind of self-helpy kind of books there that people could start working a little bit with, and then also find practitioners that are trained in these kinds of methods to work with, because it's really quite different to the more traditional, you know, even though I'm a fully trained clinical psychologist, this is not really what most of my clinical psychology colleagues are doing. So I left that sort of way of seeing trauma a little while back, and I find this so much more more nourishing and more effective.
Oh, that's amazing. So just to sort of pull things together, so all these approaches that you just mentioned, they really focus on mindfulness and working, again, not maybe hands-on, but working with the body.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there can be some touch involved, like it might mean a hand on a back, or I would use my hands to, you know, be the pressure for somebody to push against or something like that. But yeah, it's not at all a massage hands-on kind of approach, but really listening to that body wisdom.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this. I think it's so important, again, and one of the hopes for this summit is that people will get some insight into where pain might be coming from in their case and how to release trauma. Yeah. So we will make sure, of course, that there's a link to your website and where people can and get that information. So thank you so much for sharing this today.
Do we have time for a little example?
Oh, please.
Would you be interested in
that? Very much so.
Great. I have this great example that I use a lot to describe it to people. It was such a cool case of somebody I saw as a young boy who came in to see me because he had been, he was a very sweet young guy, sensitive, gentle, always been that in his nature. And his parents sent him because he had started punching up kids on the soccer field. He'd started getting aggressive on in his soccer games, and they're kind of like, what is going on? And so we did this kind of work together, and what had what we worked with the punching. We worked with the impulse. And I have a big ball in my office, and he was able to do a lot of a nice punch, really beautifully mindful, slowed down into the ball and really feel the, you know, the energy of it. And what it turned out to be connected to was two things in his life. One was that the history was that only recently he had been on a holiday and gone into the men's bathroom in a restaurant, and an older man had exposed himself to him. Mm-hmm. He had managed to turn and walk away, and his parents were there. And so in his mind and his parents' mind, really, it was okay. Nothing mm-hmm. had really happened because he hadn't really been hurt. He'd just been exposed to, and he got away and everything was fine. And then what I think had happened was that then another kid who was a very dear friend of his, a younger boy, had been inappropriately approached by an older kid in school. And that was the trigger. Mm-hmm. So when something in the present had happened, how I saw it was it activated this incomplete response that had not been finished. And so when we did the work with the punching, he recalled the image of being in that bathroom, and actually what he wanted to do was punch the guy. Mm-hmm. But of course his smart brain mm-hmm. told him, don't do that, get out of here. Yeah. But that was really, I think, was a great example, because it was clear that that was his body's impulse. Mm-hmm. And he, when he got to do that, literally one big slow punch into a ball in my office, he never punched anybody again on the soccer field. It just went away completely. So that was such a cool example, and it's a really nice and neat one to describe it. And of course that was really great because he'd only just had this event. It was, you know, fairly short-lived. Of course, if I'd seen him 20 years on, where nothing had been done about it, I would imagine we'd be seeing a completely different story. Yeah. So that's the exciting part, is being able to heal that, really truly heal that pain of trauma.
Yeah, and I think it also illustrated such a great point is, you know, it might not even be called traumatic. You're right. You know, he got That's out right. of there. That's his right. parents were there. Yeah. So you might not have, you know, known to look at that and say, oh, that's what's going on still for this kid, because
That's
it
right.
seemed
That's right.
like.
Exactly. Exactly.
There were no consequences.
And so often that's the case. People can't link their current symptoms and their current distress to anything. It doesn't seem to hang on to anything. Yeah. But when we see it through this lens, it's like so obvious. It's so clear, the connections, when you can listen to the language of the body.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And that is a
My
great
pleasure.
Example. So bless you for doing such great work.
Thank you.
It's amazing. So thanks again for taking time today to talk to the audience. And
My pleasure.
We'll have your website up if people want to learn more. So
thank you.
Thanks again, Karen.
And thank you, Audrey. I just love what you're doing. It's so inspiring. It's just so wonderful to see how you're reaching out to people. It's an absolute honor to be a part of this. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you. I'm blushing.
Oh, good.